Outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your Outdoors Hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Well, not quite. This is Bob Marissa sitting in for V. Paul tonight as he's down there basking in the sun down in South Florida. You want to buckle up and get a cup of coffee or your adult beverage that you enjoy our program with, because tonight we got a special one. I'm going to do the digest and then we're going to get right into it and be off and running. This year, we have a lot of things going on. First off, the 13th to 21st is a free fishing week. This is unusual because usually it's just a free fishing weekend.
Usually weekend, that's
it. But they spread it out for the whole week, so that's something to take into account.
Trying to get people outdoors.
Yes, they are. Also, with this situation that we're in, there's been a number of things that have been canceled. Sportsman shows, fishing derbies, and all that kind of stuff. I know the Bucks Mills Rod and Gun Club, but I'm a member of, we canceled our fishing derby. We had to make the decision. We weren't sure of ice conditions and all the other things going on. And then the sportsman show's been canceled. So if you have a sporting organization in your community, I think it'd be nice if you could think about how much you would have spent at their event and just donate it to them, because these people are hurting. These are their big fundraisers of the year, and they're not going to be able to have them.
That's
and
right.
So the financial burden on, like, the Penobscot Valley Conservation Association, the Presque Isle Rod and Gun Club, or those that have these big sportsman shows, that's a big hit. The fly fishers with their cabin fever reliever and things. So if you can just loosen up a little bit and donate a little bit of money to these folks, I think it'd be much appreciated. Now, am I some excited? We have we haven't been having internet guests. We haven't been doing, I guess, long distance. And I tell you, tonight is long distance. We have Nancy Becker, and we're going to talk to her. She's in Alaska. And Nancy, how are you?
I'm good. This is fun. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Oh, you're certainly welcome. If you folks saw the program on TV, The Last Alaskans, Nancy Becker was married to Bob Hart. And she has since written a book called Trapline Chatter about her and his experiences in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, where they live for a good part of each year. And it's interesting because Jeremy Wood wrote a review of her book in the Sporting Journal, and I read it, and I said, wow, I remember that show, and I get to have that book. And come to find out, she was also interviewed by Jeremy Wood, and so she's had two interviews, both from Maine. So, Nancy, could you just give us a brief overview of what, just exactly, first off, the title of the book, Trapline Chatter. Where did that come from?
The Trapline Chatter, anyone in Alaska knows about that. It's trapline, so it's from the trapline, and chatter is love it, chit-chat. But what trapline chatter is when you want to communicate to somebody that lives out in the bush someplace in Alaska and say you want to communicate from Maine or from Florida or even from, you know, Fairbanks in town, you have to call a number, a radio station like you guys, and tell them who you are, who the message is going to, give them the message, and they will read that message over the radio station to people out in the bush, so that was the main communication back when we were back in the 80s. We didn't have, you know, they have other things now, but that was the communication from town people to people in the bush, or from families far away to people living in the bush. And it was called Trapline Chatter, and it was on the radio station KJMP, North Pole, Alaska. So that's why Trapline, we were always going to write a book, and that was always going to be, I wanted that title to be the name of that book, because it just makes sense.
So what it amounted to is a giant party line.
Not a giant one, because there weren't, you know, there weren't a lot of messages going out. I wouldn't say it was maybe a half hour at the most of reading, maybe 10 minutes. But it's funny because, yeah, with the gossip line, you could hear what you know, was going up at Hymo's, down to Bob Hart's, down to, you know, someone else, Jago, whoever else is, you know, on the trap line, you know, something about them.
So was that a specific time of the day then, huh, that you could tune in every day?
Yep, it was in the evening.
The evening, yeah.
Yep.
Well, that's really one of those things I rang back to when I was a child. Everybody had party lines, and you had to be careful because sometimes your neighbor would be listening to what you were saying. So
That's right.
That's kind of the same idea.
Same idea. And you had to have a radio, and you had to have a way the radio was working. So that was always a problem out in the bush, too. So, you know. But Trapline Chatter is a very appropriate title for that book.
Yes, it's interesting. I want to bring up here one of my favorite books about things like this was written by Aldo Leopold. He was the first Secretary of the Interior, and back in the 30s he wrote a book called The Sand County Almanac. And the thesis of his book was not wilderness, but wildness. He thought wildness was important, and wildness was defined by the most wild animal that live in the area. So I guess in your area in Alaska, wildness would have been paramount.
Yeah, it would have been, because you're so far away from everything. So, I mean, you can go to the wilderness, you're right. You can go to a national park or be in the wilderness, but way so far away from everything. I always thought, you know, when I saw a moose or something, or even a bear, that we may have been the first and only human being that animal ever saw. That's pretty amazing, because, you know, in the parks and stuff, even down at Denali, when those buses go through, you see a lot of wildlife. You do see a lot of wildlife and wilderness there, but there's a lot of people going through, and those animals are used to people. But when you go out in Arctic National Wildlife or someplace, you know, that's a pretty wild wilderness, and you don't have a lot of people, and the animals that you see are not too familiar with people.
Now, do they have brown bears? They have grizzly bears in up in that area, or are they more like coastal things?
There's both. But we mostly had the black bears and a lot of, there were actually a lot of grizzly bears out there.
Yeah, so in that area, the grizzly bear would have been, as far as the wild animals go, the grizzly bear would be on the top of the food chain.
Yep. Yep.
So that certainly is wild.
That's wild.
Now,
yep.
What prompted you folks to go there?
Well, Bob was there before I was ever there. Bob was there almost ten years before me, maybe. And he left, of course, New Jersey, and after reading all about Alaska. And he went right to Southeast Alaska, started there, and that wasn't what he wanted. He wanted more where the fur country was, which was interior. So he ended up in the place where we are, Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and he was there for 40 years. So I came along. He was there in the early 70s, and I came in 81, so almost 10 years later. But that was his home for like 40 years.
Wow. And now, at that time, there were like 7 families that lived in that area that were permitted to live there?
At that time, I'm not even sure how many were out there. Probably, I don't know if there were less than that. I'm not sure, but now there's just a handful now, and the permits are, you know, going to expire. And once Bob's and my child, Talisha, she can't pass that on. So that's the end of the permits.
Right.
So, you know, that's it.
Yeah, I
so
remember.
We got in at a good time.
I remember seeing at the end of some of the program, Haimo's daughter came back and was living there for a period of time. But what I've been telling you, she has since left. Now, if she leaves there, do they maintain that right as long as they're alive, or once you leave, you're gone?
No, she as long as she's alive. Like Felicia's not living out there or anything, but we've gone out every year now, so she has the right to. She has that permit, and only she has that permit.
Right. So, paint us a picture, if you would, of where you lived in the Anwar.
I tell you what. Before we go to that, why don't we take the break?
Certainly.
Okay.
Well, and while we're doing that, why don't you feed out the phone number so in case anybody wants to call in and ask a question?
Good question. I draw a blank on the phone number. It's 1-800. Anybody else out there? That's interesting because I don't normally give out the number, so I draw a blank. But we'll get it out there sometimes here this evening.
Oh, okay. Well, the reason I was asking you because I drew a blank on the number.
It's terrible. It's part-timers, you know. Okay, here we go with the break. And we got a loyal caller or two that bailed us out on that phone number. I appreciate it very much.
It wasn't Jim Layton, was it, by
no,
any chance?
No, I was expecting Jim, but it wasn't. But anyways, that number is 1-800-966-1039. 1-800-966-1039.
Okay, Nancy, if you would, give us a little bit of a feel for where it is that you lived.
Well, it's hard to explain if you've never been, like you said, out in the wild wilderness, because flying in a plane over wilderness areas, you still see roads and you still see, you know, other things. You see people, houses, whatever. When you fly right outside of Fairbanks, get in that plane, you're in the wilderness, like in 5 minutes. And you fly for 2 hours in a plane, first of all, before you see really anything else. You're going over the mountains and you're going over the rivers. And when we went out in the end of August, it wasn't covered with snow. So we got to see all the rivers and the trees and just colors. And it's a lot of the same, but you can't keep your eyes off of it. It's like watching a campfire. You're mesmerized by it. Just look down there. And you'd think that you're going to see, you know, lots of bears or whatever. I don't know what you think, but I say it's nothing, but it's so much that you're just in a trance looking at the wilderness. It's just miles and miles and miles, 2 hours, without seeing another home, another person, a building. So that alone, when you fly out for the first time and do that, that's like, whoa, where am I going? What am I doing for your first time? And then it's like you can't get enough of it once you are in it, and I say in my book, so what's it really, that one chapter is like, what's it really like out there? It's hard to tell somebody that has never been out there what it's really like, because they're not going to know. And when they go out and experience, it's going to be different than what I experienced. But it's like an amazing adventure. It's going to be a new experience. It's all new stuff you're going to learn. You're going to learn a lot about yourself. And it's beautiful. You know, it's nature at its best. And you have a little place of your own out there in the middle of this vast, vast, whatever you call it, wild wilderness to explore. And it's fresh air, and there's not any noises or bad smells or lots of people. It's pretty unique experience, actually. And you'll never forget it once you've been out. And it's you get a taste of that when you go to a national park or go out camping someplace, but it's just different. You're just out there in something that you can't imagine until, and then you start thinking about, well, who was here before I was here? Maybe nobody has ever been in the spot that you're in. Nobody. That's a lot of amazing stuff to think about, really. And for me, it was today, even, you know, Bob and I always said it was the best years of our life being out there. So I don't know how to explain it other than what I just said. I don't know what you really want to know.
I think you just did pretty well.
Okay.
that did it for me. Now, what was it that possessed you to do this? To move from wherever you lived in Fairbanks?
Yeah, I was actually when I met Bob, I was teaching in a very tiny village on the Yukon River, Stevens Village, and that population was maybe 30, and that was pretty much in the wilderness too. So I also went from my Michigan, the last home before I came to Alaska, Michigan to Alaska, and I went to the Southeast also. That's where Bob went, because it's a good way to get entry into the state, especially, you know, you don't know the harsh winters or anything. Southeast is a good place to start, and I lived on a boat for a while and got oriented into that lifestyle and a lot of independence and just a great adventure. And then I wanted to use my teaching skills and see more of Alaska, so I went right to the interior and, you know, ended up Stevens Village, which is, like I said, on the Yukon River. It's an Athabascan Indian village and maybe 30 people. And that was my introduction to harsh winters and Alaska, and I met Bob on a plane ride. We were both going into, I was going in from an interview, and he was coming in to get supplies. So that's how we met. And then from that point on, well, I met him, and then a year later, I didn't see him for a year, and then I saw him a year later in town, and the second time I met him, then we stayed together. And I'm all about adventure, and he offered a great adventure. So, you know, we hit it off, and off we were. We took off pretty quickly.
So what possessed you to do that is just your innate feeling of a need for adventure.
I think adventure was a big part of it. I'm always, to this day, up for an adventure, something new, to learn about something new, experience how different people live, and so that was a big part of it. But living in Alaska is a lot like that. You know, we lived like that even before we went out, you know, the trap line. We were living in a gravel pit, and that was a good adventure. Just, you know, it was fun. It was back then. It was just, you know, it was attractive, and I'd always liked the nature and wilderness and fishing and all, you know, like that kind of lifestyle. So it wasn't, I don't think I thought too much about it. I thought, oh yeah, let's do it.
Well, there's a lot of people out there that I'm sure that are saying, wow, that really sounds like more of an adventure than most of us would be willing to take on. Right? I can certainly have a lot of respect for you, and a lot of it's kind of in awe of the whole thing, especially when you talk about, like I was reading in your book, didn't you live a certain part of the years at a trap line spot in a tent?
Yes, the first few winters we lived in a tent in the middle of winter, downriver from where our cabin was, and that was probably the closest I got to the wilderness or nature or even myself. Those were wonderful days. They were not easy days, but you really experienced something extraordinary being in the middle of, I would say, nowhere, in a tent. And sometimes Bob left, too. He'd leave me for a week and go off to another tent. I think about that now. I go, what was I thinking? You know? Or I think about, in my book it says, well, did I question, if I didn't have a chainsaw, you know, we had cut wood and we had a little stove, airtight stove in the tent. One of my questions was, I didn't have a chainsaw. We had one saw, I believe. And I thought as I was writing that book, did I ever question, did we take another blade? I mean, those are some of the things I thought about. And what would happen if Bob didn't return from his, you know, trap line down further? And I was there by myself. There's a lot of questions I asked afterwards. I can't remember if I asked him then, but it was a great adventure. I loved living like that. And Bob did too, of course. He had done it more than me. But for me, it was just one learning thing after another. And it wasn't always fun. It was very frustrating sometimes, as my book says. I was very frustrated with some things sometimes. But looking back, you know, it was wonderful.
Now, tell us about, like, I think I read in your book about after you had your daughter, what you had to do in order to deal with diapers.
That was something. I don't know. Oh, yeah. You don't take Pampers and, you know, Huggies or anything like that to the trap line. Oh, no. Oh, no. So, you know, had two packs of cloth diapers, but I had to, I mean, that was days of work to wash diapers. I had to get down in the middle of winter, especially if we were back from tent, we weren't down tent camp then. If we went off to the other cabin and came back in the river, we hadn't opened the river for water. That was a chore, getting to the water. First of all, take the dog team down, make it quicker, or walk down and carry the buckets of water to build the fire outside so that you could get a boiling water going to boil those diapers, and then have to do the process all again to do the rinse. It took me 2 days to do it, but the process, sometimes 3 feet of ice to get through to get water. So that was, you know, that was kind of one of the frustrating ones, and I always got angry with Bob. I said, I'm not doing that, you know, I'm not going to stand on there all day and chop the hole. So he'd get his chainsaw and we'd have to get through. But most of the time you learn when you leave your water hole, you cover it with cardboard and cover it with snow and make sure you can get back into it and don't be gone too long. But you can't control any of that. So washing diapers was a chore. And carrying all that water from the river up to the fire to get a boil going, to do the diapers, and then having to rinse them, do another load to rinse, and then you hang them in the cabin, and they're like cardboard when they're done. So poor Talisha. Oh, my goodness. You know, I'd rub them in my hands, and like you're getting the fur nice and soft, and you try to get the skin going, make it less crunchy. Doing diapers was not fun, I'll tell you that.
Well, I just wanted to bring that point up so that folks get a little sense of the realism of it all.
Oh, yeah. Everything is hard, but, you know, that's what makes, you know, you're living life. You're alive, and you're living life out there, and you never bored. You have to be thinking about what you're doing every day and planning your day. It's survival out there. You have to think, do you have your wood, your food, everything you have to be thinking about just to survive out there. It's not, that's what the difference is when you go on a camping trip. You take your food, or you go, you know, you can go out in the wilderness in a national park or something, but it's not the same. And you can't run back to your car or anything. You know, and back then we didn't have an emergency phone. We didn't have anything. So, you know, there were some times that it was scary. You know, when Talisha was a baby and got sick, that was scary to me. No way to get any place. And I have to remember, that was my choice to go out there. I'm delighted I did everything I did. It's just something that's with me to this day, and that's why I try to go back every year, even though it's difficult. It's just something so special. You know, Bob, you've been out.
Absolutely.
You've been out, and just to go into your cabin or wherever. Anyone that's out there just goes on a fishing trip or, you know, a hunting trip, or there's something special that is more and more missing in our society. We're getting farther and farther away from that. But people that get to experience it, they know that it's a gift. It's a treasure.
Well, we're going to have to take another break here, folks. I hate to break it up. I'm really enjoying everything that you're telling us. But we'll be back in a few minutes.
Okay.
We're live on the air.
Okay. Nancy, one of the things in reading your book that really struck me is the fact that you wrote about the fact that when Bob went out there and when some of these people went out there, like, he had a fellow fly him out there and drop him off, and then all of a sudden he realized that what happened if something happened to that fellow before he was supposed to come back and get me?
Oh, that has happened.
Yeah.
That was one of Bob's early stories in my book where he wrote about when he was first in the early days out on his trap line, and he didn't know too much about pilots, and he didn't know too much about communication and getting in and out, and that could have been a very bad situation. He was dropped out there by a pilot, and he told the pilot to come get him at a certain time. Well, the pilot went off and was chasing some woman, as Bob explained it, and forgot about him. So, you know, there was Bob waiting for a plane, and plane didn't come, so he didn't know what he was going to do. And And a lot of time goes, and a lot, you can be waiting for a plane anyway. Bob's waited over 3 weeks for a plane because of weather at some point, he mentions too. But this pilot totally forgot about him, and of course the only one that remembered about Bob being out there was he had a couple friends from Fort Yukon. That's where Bob would go during the summers, and he met some other trappers and stuff, and someone starts talking, hey, haven't seen Bob. Where is he? And so the guy talks to some preacher that uses his plane to go out to different villages and stuff, and he went out and flew out and looking for Bob and found him. And, of course, Bob was delighted that someone came out to get him. And that does happen. You know, that's how the communication was about. You know, just tell someone to come pick you up. Well, if they forget about you or if they die or whatever, then you're stuck out there. That's how it was back then. Like I said, today that wouldn't happen because everybody has their, they can even text out there now, which it just amazes me what they can do today.
Satellite phones and
Satellite phones. Yeah, sat phones. That's what they call them. Obviously, we didn't have one of those till the very last days. I think when I was out there, Bob finally got one.
Now I want to read you a quote from your book, and I'd like to have you expound on it a little bit. It says, "The feeling I had walking up the trail to the cabin back in '81 is the same as when walking it today, 40 years later. A feeling deeper than any appearance can create. The cabin and the surrounding space and the trail, the trees, the creek, all things my eyes reveal cannot touch what my heart feels. But the essence of our place in Anwar, if I were blind, I could feel it drawing me in."
Yeah.
So explain, yep. Most of us, there are very few of us that can touch things that deeply from a point of feeling. A lot of us can see things and observe things, but it's the feeling part that goes deeper.
Well, that's why I was telling you on earlier when you asked me, it's extremely difficult to explain to somebody what that's like out there. For me, I'm a real feely person, and I that's my communicational mode, especially out in the woods and in with nature, and it's a silent communication, but it's a very deep knowing. It's a connection. It's a joint togetherness. It's part of. So you become part of what's out there. Bob became part of it. He wouldn't have spoken like I do about it, but he was part of that community out there. He loved his community out there, not just his cabin, not just that he could go hunting out his front door. He loved being a part of that community. And just as you're a part of your own neighborhood or whatever, you know, it becomes your home. That was his home. It became my home when I was out there. And there's no way to explain that home feeling. You're there. It's part of you. I don't know how else to say it.
Well, no, I think that's pretty much does it. It's a matter of, I have, you know, we all have special places and things like that, and there's a feeling, there's an ambience about it that, you know, it's like, I know, you know, you could blindfold me and drive me around all over the place, but take me and walk me into my camp, and I'd know I was there.
Right. Yep. So you do know that. See, you do know what I'm talking about. And when you get in touch with your feelings and you go deep, I mean, it's there. It's deep, and it's like I said before, it's a treasure. It's just brings tears to my eyes just thinking about it.
Yeah, certainly. Before I go any further, I want to just take a second. I want to say hi to Peggy and Ben up to Grand Lake Stream and my boss from my work, Meredith, who was supposed to be listening in here tonight. Peggy, this friend of ours, she lives. They live at Grand Lake, at Coldstream Pond. Excuse me, I got my streams mixed up. But Coldstream Pond in the wintertime, and she was concerned about having to live up there because of the COVID thing, being isolated a little bit, about living in the wilderness.
Yeah.
And I professed to her that I sent her your book and said, well, you read this, and you really know what wilderness is.
Oh, that's right. I remember signing that book. Yeah. Oh, Peggy. Oh, hi, Peggy.
So that's what we're shooting for here. Now, are there people still doing what you did?
You mean out in Anwar now?
Yes.
Not how we did it. I think we talked about this before, and I've even said today, it can't be the same. It's not the same. As I said, we didn't even have headlamps back then. I can't even imagine going out there without a headlamp. I mean, I live with headlamps here. I have three of them, you know, and I'm in town. But we didn't have headlamps. We didn't have even sat phones. We had a dog team. We didn't have snow machines. In that era, in the 70s, 80s, there's nobody living like that. It can't be because it's too modernized. It's too techy. It's too advanced. It's you know, you can still have that connection and have that treasure that it is living out there, but it's not the same. It can't be the same because it's not.
No, the technology has I think, in a way has done us a disservice.
Yes, and that's why it's so nice to get out for people to get out to their, like you do, to get out to your cabins, get out, take your family out someplace, and it's a different feel than being tied to town, tied to all the things we're tied to now in this modern society. And it's just change, you know, it's just different, but it is different.
See, I struggle in my situation in the fact that we have acquiesced and have allowed internet connection at my camp, and I'm somewhat distraught over it, and the fact that I want my grandchildren to have that feeling of being without it.
Right.
And if we didn't have it, but it's almost impossible to get away from it.
Almost is. Almost. Yep.
You know, there are places here in Maine that we can go where there's no cell phone services, no kind of service like that, and we go to some of those places and we can get away for a while, but... you know,
it certainly gets you more in touch with yourself also when you place yourself in an environment where there isn't all that stuff. You really, and that's what it is living out that far, you have to rely on yourself and you have to be aware of what's going on around you. Whereas today we can float through a little bit if we're in town, just kind of like little robots almost, you know. That's, you know, just how it is. But it's certainly nice to experience yourself and your environment and what's around you, what's alive right before your very eyes, and what you can communicate with without technology.
Now, another point I read, quoting from your book again on page 136, it says, "The preciousness of a time alone and the solitude is a guaranteed treasure if one is able to be open to that time and allow it to penetrate and remake your being." How did your experience in Anwar and your living out in the winter, how did it change you?
Well, all that we've been talking about, it made me be more aware of myself. It made me be more aware so that I could stay alive for survival, to pay attention to what was going on around me. It was very important for staying alive out there and for, obtaining necessary things to stay alive. And I think that having lived that way has made me a lot more reliable on myself, independent, also appreciative of what's there, even outside my cabin door today, even though I'm in town, to know that there's just an abundance of things right before my very eyes that is full of adventure and full of wonder and full of great things. And we pass by those things. Like just this morning I was out walking. I was so appreciative of the birds singing. Can you picture a world without birds? No. It would be terrible without birds. People don't think about it, though. They don't think about it because it's just there all the time, and the birds are kind of ignored. But that's one little example, to be appreciative of what we have. Oh, my goodness. A lot to be thankful for.
That most certainly is. It was interesting in that you stated that when you got back into town in the summertime, after being out in the woods, you could hardly wait to get to a grocery store so you could get all of those goodies and things that you missed. However, when you got there, Yeah. You could only stand it for a few minutes and had to leave.
Yeah, that's weird. And you ask anyone that, all these trappers that, you know, all our friends that are out there now, it's the same thing. It's a big adjustment coming back. And I did. I used to dream about going down the food aisles for carrots and eggs and cheese. I remember, I couldn't wait to get to the grocery store. And then I'd get to town and just driving to the grocery store, the lights were so bright. And this was still, you know, maybe even in Christmas time when we'd go in sometimes. The lights were so bright, and I hadn't seen colors in a long time because we're living in a dark, it's a dark cabin, and it's dark out there most of the time. You don't see much. It's dark. So you're not seeing a bunch of colors. At least, you know, with us, we're living with lanterns, and you didn't have electricity or any bright lights, and there's not much sunlight. And then you get into the store. Oh, my word.
Hold your thought right there, Nancy. We have to take another short break, please.
Okay.
All right, and this is Al Elkins. Do you have the information on that? Okay, Al Elkins is our sponsor that we've had for many, many years. He's over in Brewer with General Appliances. And I don't know all the names of the appliances that he has, but he, as Jim would say, has the compost toilets, so ride the wave. He is a great serviceman.
Serville,
exactly. A lot of gas appliances, but he's really handy, worth checking out if you ever have any need for such appliances or if you have electrical appliances and that they need to be serviced. He's extremely handy and worth checking out.
He's an expert on gas appliances, gas stoves, gas refrigerators, and so on and so forth. So if you get that camp that's up, not quite as remote as Nancy's was, but it was a place where you run on gas, and he's the person to talk to.
Sure is, and you can get a hold of him at 989-4341. That's 989-4341.
Okay, Nancy, a couple more things. First off, before we go any further, would you like to give over the air to have people, if anybody that's listening, if you want to find out how to get a hold of this book, get out a piece of pencil and a paper, because I'm going to have Nancy, would you want to give people an address that they can contact to get you a copy of your book?
Okay. Ready?
Yep.
Well, the best way for me is you order through the Alaskan Cash. If you Google, just write the Alaskan Cash, and cash is C-A-C-H-E. That's not the, you know, money, C-A-S-H.
Yeah, it's a storage place.
Yeah, the storage place, right. The Alaskan Cash. You'll open that up, and you'll see where you can order two items. It's through Shopify, a place called Shopify. I will get those orders. I don't have a computer, but my sister takes the orders down in Washington State. She calls me every night with the orders. I take them to the post office. And if you order through that, that's the best deal for me, and I will sign those. If you send a message and say who it's to, then I will personally sign those books. The other way is just, you know, I think they're on Amazon now. I heard they're on Amazon. I don't know how that works. And then my publisher also sells them. But the best for me is the Alaskan Cash, and then you can get an autographed book if you want that.
And I'd also say that if you happen to live in the Bucksport area, we have a wonderful bookstore in Bucksport right on Main Street called Bookstacks. And Andy at Bookstacks is starting to carry this book.
And we have a caller for you, Nancy.
Oh, awesome.
Go ahead, caller.
And could we have your name and where you're calling from, please?
Yeah, this is Fern from Norway.
Go ahead, Fern.
Nancy.
Yes.
My wife and I enjoy all those programs about what you're doing up there and, you know, and others and whatever like that. One of the programs that I think has a little of quite a bit of enhancement to it, but we still enjoy it, is the Alaskan Railroad. And on a program about 2 weeks ago, there was a lady from the Willy Wags up there, all right, that was waiting for her shipment, her spring shipment of honeybees from the lower 48, because they said that the honeybees couldn't make it through the Alaskan winter because it got so cold. Well, you know, I enjoy the outdoors. I'll leave it at that. Okay? So my question right off to my wife, I said, Sylvia, I says, how in the world does everything get pollinated if it's too cold for the honeybees to make it through the winter? So I'm asking you that question.
Oh, That I really, we have bees. We have a lot of bees, is all I can tell you. And I'll tell you what, those bees and the flies sometimes will come out in our houses in the middle of winter through our firewood.
So I mentioned
that. And now I can't hear.
No, I don't think
we got a reverb.
Yeah, I don't think he's there anymore. But
no.
But I do have a question for you. Jim, you know, called in, and he was wondering, all the time you were up there, did you ever have a close encounter with wildlife as far as that was something that would have been real concerning, bears or whatever else that left an impact on you? You know, people usually think of Alaska, and you know, and you're thinking about close encounters with the grizzlies, the brown bears, you know, the black bears.
Yeah, we had Bob's had he wrote about in the book too a story when he was first up there, pretty close encounter with us when I had my son up there and he was about 5 years old. There was a grizzly that was around camp for days. We knew because the dogs would be barking, and we'd go out and we'd see the trail that he left with his paw prints, and I won't forget that. We never got to, I didn't actually see that one, but in that time, I mean, my son could sit in that paw print, just to let you know, that's what I remember. And one time, Bob shot a caribou downriver, and he just kind of cached it, threw a tarp over it, and he sent me down the next day and said, go check out the, you know, see if that caribou is still there. Well, I got down there, and the backs of the hairs on the back of my neck was just standing up. I could just sense there was, you know, there was something not right. And I didn't actually see the bear there, but I saw that he had taken that whole, almost the whole thing. There was like a couple feet left and part of a head. And I just got real anxious and went back. There was those two, and then one time Bob was checking some snares, and Trevor, my son, and I were walking along the river. And Bob went up, he said, hang up, he said, stay there or walk along the river, I'm going to go up and check one of my trails. And he went up with his gun, and we hear him shout, get down. So there was a bear between him and us from the river to where he was up on the trail a little bit, shouting distance. So we got down and laid down, and he had to shoot this bear. It got caught in a snare. And so there were those, but other than that, probably I ran into a moose going around the corner one time. I always carried a pistol with me, just in case. And that's what's interesting, though, what I was saying about the difference in wildlife out there. I was walking around the corner, and the moose and her calf were there. And that could be a dangerous situation. And I just sensed that I was just going to go by slowly. And they were very close to me. I would say 25 feet. That was very close.
Mm.
But they were watching. But I watched the, you know, I know in town here when the ears go back, I've had more incidents with moose right around my cabin here than out there. They were not making moves to be anxious about me or charge or ears back. There was not that going on, which was very fascinating to me. So I just walked by very slowly and kept going, looking back, of course, and nothing happened. And I won't ever forget things like that. That can't happen around town because the moose know about people in town.
Nancy, I want to let you know that we got about 3 minutes, and when we leave, it'll be kind of sudden, and so we'll just be disconnected and hang up. But I'll be emailing you tomorrow, so we'll stay in contact. Now, you said you carried a pistol. I'm assuming it wasn't a .22.
No, I carried a .45 Colt or something like that. I don't even remember what it was. Does that sound like something?
Yeah, that sounds like something. I'm sure that Bob made sure that you had enough artillery to deal with what you might have to deal with.
Yeah, when I was going down fishing or something, I would take a rifle or, you know, just depends on where we were going. Bob was usually with me if there was iffy situations, but Trevor and I would go down to the creek, you know, and just we knew we were safe there. It was close enough, so, yeah.
So this... This I have to tell you has been an experience, and I'm sure that our listeners will have found it an experience too.
I hope so. I've enjoyed this, and I want to thank you for having me, and thank everyone for listening to programs like yours that get into the simple lifestyle, and it just gives people an aliveness and something that a lot of people miss just by running through life so quickly, which we do today. Pay attention to yourself and what's out there when you, in those quiet times. I think that's really important.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. One of my things in life that I think people miss too much is they don't have enough time where there is nothing.
Right. Yes.
Just aloneness.
Absolutely. And there's so much in that space right there. That's right. I agree. Thank you, Bob.
Well, people have, with Facebook and all the things that are going on, people have a tendency to want to take all of the time that there is and fill it with something.
Right. I agree. Yeah.
And by your story and the way you've communicated it tonight and everything, it's very obvious that you've spent time and that you know yourself.
Pretty well. I mean, I learned a lot about myself. I'm still learning a lot about myself. And it's the quiet moments. It's the, you know, I sit under my tree every day. There's this spruce tree out there. I sit under every day, and I need to do that. I need my alone time. I need to get away and just be by myself.
Now, when you go back to the camp now, do you visit the throne?
Oh, yes, every time. That's one of our favorite things.
No, yeah. The throne isn't the throne you think of as the throne they have. There's a rock on the side of the hill where Bob went to sit to think and ponder. He called
right.
The throne.
Yep.
When I said the throne, Norm started to laugh. We all visit the throne about every day, but
oh yeah, we have one of those too.
Well, thank you very much. This has been awesome, Nancy, and I'll be in touch with you tomorrow.
Thank you,
okay,
Nancy. Yep. Appreciate it.
Everybody for listening.
Yep. Bye now.
Okay. Bye bye.
And we'll all see you next week at the same time. The Maine Outdoors.
Now, Maine Outdoors.